Welcome to Tales from the Dance Floor, a podcast exploring the lives and times of people from all walks of life who follow their passions and made careers out of DJing, producing, parties, dance culture, and the music industry. I'm Phil Morse from Digital DJ Tips. Let's get started. I'd like to welcome Uncas, otherwise known as DJ TLM, and I can see the light going on in people's minds all over the world when I mention that name, because of course, TLM, you are one of the most recognized DJ teachers online, whether it's your podcast or whether it's your YouTube reviews or advice and coaching that you distribute. Everyone knows who you are, and everyone at some point has clicked on one of your videos and thought, this guy knows his stuff. So welcome. It's a privilege to have you on our Tales from the Dance Floor podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. Very glad to be here.
So listen, I want to start off by saying you've made a real name for yourself. You've got hundreds of thousands of subscribers on your channels. You've got people all over the world indebted to you and the help you've given them. Did you ever think that you'd end up doing this if you look back?
No, I think this was, I won't even say it was the furthest thing on my mind. It just wasn't on my mind at all. I basically rolled into DJing because of the love I had for hip hop. And I just love playing music and manipulating music. But to be here now where you can connect with people from all over the world and that I'm able to help people from all over the world, I would have never imagined that. But I feel totally blessed that this is a possibility and that it's actually happening now.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because some people really enjoy teaching and some people, it's just something that doesn't, you know, that doesn't occur to them, or they have a go and it's just, you know, it doesn't work. But you're an absolute natural teacher. You're one of these people who can turn on the camera or the microphone and just talk DJing. And, you know, there's not many people in this game who can do that, who can talk DJing without actually turning on the decks for, you know, an hour, 2 hours, however long you've got.
Yeah.
And it's all useful stuff. It's all, you must have all the way through your DJing career, you must have kind of had a little voice in your head teaching an imaginary student as you were doing everything, right? You must have had this stuff building up inside you, because there's no way it kind of occurs on the spot, right? This is years of knowledge that you've been storing up. Is that kind of how it feels to you?
Crazy thing is, it really isn't. Like, throughout the first maybe 15 years of my DJ career, I never thought about teaching at all. It wasn't even on my mind. I didn't have people that I taught. I wasn't a mentor for anyone. I knew basically all of the DJs in Amsterdam, at least a lot of DJs, beginner DJs as well. But it was never a thing that it was really, I don't know, I don't want to say, I mean, teaching somehow came naturally for me, but it wasn't something that was in the back of my mind, like, hey, this is something I could possibly do. It's basically something I stumbled into it from doing videos online, where I was basically just posting mixed videos on YouTube just to promote myself, when a lot of DJs weren't doing that yet. And I thought, because I was adding turntablism to my DJing, I wanted the visual aspect, because a lot of people, if they don't know turntablism and they just hear audio, they get confused. I mean, I've been through situations where we had complaints being called into a radio station where I was doing a showcase because the listeners just didn't understand what I was doing. So I wanted to add video, and I just started to post videos of myself mixing. Then I got in a lot of trouble. Videos got flagged, deleted, muted because of the copyright issues. But I still wanted to do something. And that basically turned into the educational channel that I made after that. So I never had it on my mind before I actually just started doing it.
That's a really interesting progression, that you wanted to share your music and then you wanted to share your music online. And then that became untenable, and then only from that you end up kind of sharing the knowledge. And of course that's your hashtag. So it's great to hear that. I mean, a lot of people do kind of, I mean, I'm going to use the words get away with, but I don't think they're the right words because people's hearts are in the right place when they're doing this. But a lot of people do still share mixes online and seem to, again, I'll use the words get away with it.
Yep.
Why? How? What do you see as the things that allow some people to succeed? And there's some channels with massive subscribers and all they really do is just grab the latest DJ City top 10 and smash them together on a controller and bang, there you go. And yet you said you had a lot of trouble with this. What's the difference? Or has it kind of changed?
I'm not quite sure. I'm also not sure if... Well, I do know at the time that I had my old channel, YouTube treated the copyright issue a little bit differently because at that time, they weren't in a place where they, as they do now, they can spot a track in your video. And instead of just deleting your video or muting it, now they'll just monetize your video and the proceeds will go to the rightful owner of the music. I know that happens. That started to happen a little bit at the end of my last channel. I mean, that channel was still up. It's just DJ TLM on YouTube. I still have videos up there. But I also noticed that in certain countries like Germany, they were not able to see my videos. And on mobile, they weren't able to see some of those videos. So I just wanted to make sure I stayed totally away from that on my new channel. And I only use my own productions. But I have noticed a lot of channels with a lot of views, a lot of subscribers, also doing some educational stuff. And they're using all sorts of music. So at times I did wonder, like, well, wait a minute, what's going on? Is it a simple fact of just not monetizing their own videos and that maybe the artists are now monetizing their videos, or is something else happening? For me, it's still a little bit of a mystery. And people do ask me, because I've talked about this before, that you can't just use people's music. And then viewers will email me back and they'll send me links like, hey, but what about this channel? They're using all kinds of music and I don't really have an answer for them.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? But anyway, yeah. I want to talk more about kind of your journey into this. And you not only have your own podcast, you not only hashtag share the knowledge and do a lot of what I would call coaching about DJing. I love the fact that you don't teach DJing as much as you teach how to be a DJ. And there's a difference.
Yeah.
There's a difference between the technical skills of doing this thing and being able to pick the right tunes for the right people in front of you right now, which is arguably a lifetime's work and you never get that 100% right. So arguably it's something that's hard to teach. But there's a difference between those two things and teaching people how to be a DJ, what it's like as a DJ, what the mistakes you're likely to make are in a world that you possibly don't know very much about. So how would you know any better? And that seems to me to be where you're very strong. So I wanted to ask you about your passion for that. And you said you kind of drifted into it, but presumably you've been doing it for a long time now. You've got 80 podcasts up there and so on. It's a bit more than just drifting into it.
Yeah.
What is it about coaching people that you really find fascinating and that you enjoy?
I think the first thing I noticed is that it wasn't being done that much. To me, it did feel natural for me to just share your experiences. And when I first started to do it, I was getting a lot of comments from people like they were so glad that I would share because most DJs were kind of reluctant to share. So I was like, oh, okay. I didn't really notice that. But that seems to be a fact because people tell me that a lot, like a lot of DJs won't share. We're so happy that you just share what you do. Again, since I kind of stumbled into it, this is what came the easiest for me, actually. I didn't have to script anything or plan anything. I just decided from the very beginning, I don't know everything. I'm just going to talk about the things that I do know and just speak from my point of view, my experience. And at that time, when I started that YouTube channel, I was already close to, I don't know, if like at least 15 or no, 18 years, probably in something like that. So I knew I had experience. I've done a lot of gigs, a lot of performances with artists, organized events, you name it. So I just decided, hey, I'll just share my opinion, and quickly realized that A, that wasn't being done that much. Like you said, there were some educational outlets, but that was more about actually teaching and not talking about certain topics that I was bringing up mostly, like you can call it coaching basically. So that was the, I think just the go-to method that I went for. I did do some teaching stuff as well, as far as like making actual tutorials, but that is, first of all, just way more work, because then I had to make, just be absolutely sure that I was mentioning everything that needed to be mentioned to teach it the right way. And with the coaching, it's a little bit easier to just go off the top, even though after I've recorded some of my videos and podcasts, later on, I'll look back or listen back and think like, oh, I should have mentioned that and that and that, or I could have phrased that differently. But that's okay. I can just make another video or make another podcast and address a topic again, because, I mean, you've noticed this as well. You're always going to get the same questions over and over, year in, year out. And that is basically my fuel for making podcasts. A lot of times when I make my podcast is basically a Q&A show. So I just look through the questions, and there's always a ton of questions, and some questions will come back over and over again. And for me, it was just an easy decision to take questions that you see a lot and just make a video, because at the beginning I was answering people through email, but then you're just answering one person. When you know that there's more people out there that would benefit from that same answer, so I was like, hey, I might as well make videos or make podcasts, and then more people are able to hear it and they can actually share it with some of their people as well.
We have a rule here at Digital DJ Tips that you're not allowed to reply to someone if that reply is more than two sentences or 1 minute of your time. You have to do that. That has to stop being an email or a private message and become a piece of public content. Right. And then you just tell the person, I've replied to you, here it is. Because for that very reason, you're going to help a lot more people. It's funny that, you know, I had a knowing smile on my face when you said producing tutorials is a lot harder than producing coaching. It's a bit like the difference between DJing and producing music, right? Yeah. There's a very immediate thing about just chatting about this stuff and getting the feedback and helping people. It's kind of like the DJing.
Yeah.
But the tutorials is certainly a bit more like sitting down with your team and spending a little bit of time and making sure you've got it right. And, you know, the dark night of the soul when you think you've got it all wrong. And then the final thing pops out and it's not as bad as you thought it was going to be. And then it's time to do the next one.
Yeah.
That certainly made me smile, because I know that feeling. So let's talk about your DJing career, because you've played, what, 3,500 gigs over the last 20 odd years. You've supported, been the tour DJ for Brain Power, who's a very well-known Belgian-Dutch hip hop artist. And you've had quite a DJ career before all of this. Tell us how that kickstarted.
Oh yeah, no doubt. So the 3,500 shows, that's just the shows with Brain Power. So that's basically me as a tour DJ. So that's apart from my DJ gigs. I started as a DJ, and the touring came definitely some years later. But for me, it started just first of all at home. I come from a time when we had just actual turntables were part of your home setup. So it wasn't a DJ set, but our stereo set had a cassette. It had like the AM, FM tuner in there. And on top, you had a turntable, because people were still buying vinyl because CDs weren't even out yet.
Yep.
So I had a fascination with that at a young age, like just like the spinning platter kind of interested me. It intrigued me. And I remember being very young when I took my own stereo set and connected it to the one in the living room, and they both had a turntable, and I was buying some vinyl already. I don't know how old I was, probably like 13, maybe, I don't know, maybe 14. And I was able to play two pieces of vinyl at the same time, and you could hear them both. Now, mind you, this was not a blend. You did not even have a pitch control. So it was basically a train wreck, but I really liked the fact that I was able to just like play music together. And of course, hearing my first introduction to hip hop, and actually hearing and seeing DJs and hearing scratches, that for me was the main trigger. Like, okay, this is something that is really interesting. And once I saw what that was, I just knew I wanted to do it as well. So I got myself a beginner DJ set, some Technics, and I always forget the type, but it was something like the SL 23 something or 30 something. They were belt drive turntables, and you didn't even have a pitch slider. They had like this little knob on the side, and you had to twist that knob to change the tempo. And to get it back to zero, you had to look at the light on the side. And if the light was in a straight line, you knew you were playing at zero again. So basic turntables and a small mixer that had two channels, no crossfader, and no real EQ, just one knob that had high and low on it. And that was my starter set. And to me, that was the most amazing thing ever, because now I was able to start really playing the vinyl and practicing what I was hearing on albums. And that was my beginning. I had to teach myself how to DJ. And luckily, at 14, I had drumming lessons. So I drummed for a while before I got my first DJ set. I was 16 when I got the first DJ set. And somehow, without realizing at the time, drumming was the perfect foundation for DJ, because without ever receiving any tips or any lessons, I just had an automatic feeling that I was supposed to start a mix at a certain point. And that really comes from drumming, just knowing the rhythm, feeling the rhythm, understanding the one without even knowing what the one was. So I understood the principle behind it, and I just started practicing over and over. And when it came to scratching, I just started to listen to albums and try to emulate what I heard on albums until I got a sound that sounded pretty similar to what I heard on the album. So that was my start, just being in my room every second that I had time and playing with vinyl on that set. That's definitely the beginning. Now from that, it moved on to, of course, there's a lot more to it, but that's just my start. And at that time, I had no idea and just not even aspiration of doing this as a DJ for people. This was just something that was, I had a passion for doing that. So even at 16, I wasn't thinking about I'm going to practice and once I'm good enough, I'm going to do this in front of people. No, I was already in paradise having that set at home. That was basically all I needed. And so I'm still pretty amazed to see what I did after that.
It's funny you should say that, because to DJs who've played out, to DJs who've had a career playing in front of audiences, the idea of not doing it in front of an audience, it's not DJing, is it? It's not DJing anymore if you're doing it at home. Yeah. And yet I think we forget sometimes that for a lot of people, that's enough. For a lot of people, that scratches their itch. Just to have the gear and to be able to emulate what they've heard somewhere else for their own comfort and satisfaction, if you like.
100%.
That's enough. And, you know, the way we teach is we say you must get in front of an audience. You must, because you're going to learn more in that hour than we can teach you in a year. Then come back and we'll carry on. But I think it's worth recognizing that there is just a pleasure in doing it on your own, certainly at the beginning.
Yes, 100%. I mean, there is a difference. And I'll tell everyone, like, you can learn everything at home, but once you get in front of people, now this is a different ball game, and you're going to find out very quickly that it's a totally different scenario than playing at home. And even if you felt totally comfortable there, this is now you're playing in the big league when you're out in front of people. But at the essence, the passion I have for this, even after all these years, if I decided to never play another gig again, I know I would still have loads of fun just going back home and having a set there and playing with the music, because that's where it started. That's what got me into this. I know there's some people out there now that actually get into DJing because they want to get in front of people. They have some of these major DJs as an example, and that was the trigger for them to start DJing. So I understand that that's also an option, but there's a lot of people out there who just see someone DJing and look at that and think like, hey, that looks like fun, without even thinking about playing out.
Yeah.
And then get a set and find out at home that it is a lot of fun, because it is a lot of fun.
Oh, it is. It makes your hair stand on end when you get something.
Yeah.
Something right. So before we go any further, I do want to talk to you about your first gig and carry on. But there's a question that if I don't ask it now, I'm going to forget it. Ah. People stumble over your channel. You look like you come from the Bronx or something. You sound like it as well. You do not sound Dutch. Where did you get your American accent from? Where did that, how did that happen?
I have to blame it on hip hop again. So I was born and raised in Amsterdam. So I am Dutch. My mom is Dutch. My dad was from the Dutch Caribbean, an island called Curaçao. And like I said, born and raised here in the center of Amsterdam. But at a young age, so especially at that time in the Netherlands, so even now, most Dutch people speak English. That's for most people like the easiest, like second language.
Yeah.
Not to the highest level, but they will definitely understand you. If you come to the Netherlands and you only speak English, you'll be fine. But when I was young, most TV programs and movies were English. And at that time, they only used subtitles. So nowadays, they dub everything. So now you have the Dutch version of all the movies. So all the kids watch all the new movies in Dutch. They used to do that in Germany and in France. But luckily, in my time in the Netherlands, they didn't. Because to me, it always sounded horrible. If I turn on a German TV channel, and then you see someone like Sylvester Stallone, but then you hear like some squeaky German voice overdubbing him, it's like, that did not sound good at all. But in my time, everything here was English with Dutch subtitles. So you learn a lot faster and you're listening to the actual American voices.
Got ya.
And especially when hip hop came into play, and I listened to all sorts of hip hop, but East Coast was definitely the main thing. I listened to a lot of West Coast as well, but I think East Coast had the most influence on me, and that kind of formed my style of speaking, because you have a lot of people here, when they speak English, they kind of turn on sort of an English accent. And in my case, that's just not it. This is the natural type of way I'll speak English. And it definitely sounds more American than English.
It also sounds more English than English compared to a lot of Dutch people. So there's a thumbs up there. You know, it's funny. We were recording some training with Laidback Luke, and he's got an American style Dutch accent. And our man on the ground in Holland, a guy called Chuck, he walks in with all the equipment and the lights and stuff, and he starts talking to us all in English, and Luke's like, he's like, fuck, another person who talks in an American English accent. And it turned out you're the third one I know, TLM. So there you go. Well done. And I didn't mean that to sound patronizing in any way. But it's true, isn't it, about like Sylvester Stallone and stuff, because we're in Gibraltar, but just over the border is Spain.
Yeah.
And it always, I don't know if it's the same one that when you've watched kind of German dubbing over stuff and now Dutch, but they always have the same person for the actor, don't they?
So it's crazy. It bothered me so much. You would see, like I said, let's say Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes, and they both have the same voice. You're like, that doesn't make sense. No, and I mean, you also miss out, because a lot of times the people doing a voiceover, not all of them are actually good actors. So it also takes away from some of the acting that the original actors are putting in.
Yes. So I imagine massively, because I don't know if it's the same on TV there, but on the news here, when you have an under 18 who's a victim of a crime or something, they have them talking and they have them blacked out so you can't see their face. And then they have an actor doing the voice because they don't want any, you know.
Oh, wow.
And the voice is always totally unbelievable. It's like, that didn't really happen to you. I'm not feeling this. But it's true, isn't it? And I guess that's the experience with dubbing. Not that I'm privileged to, you know, most films that I watch are either made in English or they have got subtitles. Because no one ever overdubs foreign films in English for us. It's just subtitles. So anyway, look, we've digressed. I want to go back to your DJing, and I want to talk about your first gig.
Yes.
So you weren't really worried about playing out. There was no... You know, you were just doing this for yourself. Did someone offer you a gig, or did you think, no, it's time I played out? How did that happen?
So what happened is, at that time in the Netherlands, or at least in Amsterdam, so I guess at that time I was, I don't know, 17, 18. I had my DJ gear for a while. I was just practicing at home. And we also wanted to go out, just clubbing. And we ran into a situation quite often where we couldn't get into clubs. Now, sometimes or most times, this was definitely a racial issue. You would be in line and 20 people in front of you would get in And when it was your turn, all of a sudden it was members only, when none of the people before you had a pass or anything. Or even if you came back with like four girls because they told you you needed girls, they would let the girls in, and then you would get an arm in between you and the door and you still can get in. At a certain point, we were kind of fed up with that, and we decided like, hey, we're not going to spend our time and effort just to try to get into some spot where it might not even be good at all. So my room, aka the basement, that's what we called it, turned into our own creative outlet. And on weekends, we would be in there. And at the time, I was also a little bit into rapping. And we would just have sessions at my house. So we would DJ, I would DJ, and a couple of other people would also play some records. And we would just be freestyle rapping in between tracks, like playing instrumentals, rapping. And a lot of my friends were welcome, but there was only one rule. If you came, you had to either rap or DJ. So that was our creative outlet. And I met more people because some people would bring friends. And one of those people was DJing at a local youth center. And he was the person, I think that was my first gig. I think he invited me to come play. They had that party once a month. He was actually a DJ playing dancehall music. They had another DJ who played R&B. And he asked me if I wanted to come and play some hip hop. At that time, I was playing mostly hip hop anyway. So I believe that was my first gig. Now, it was a youth center, but it was actually a pretty good spot. They had like an actual stage. They had the real equipment. They had a dance floor. And they would have it pretty packed. So if I have to make an estimate, I'd say there's probably, I don't know, maybe 100 people in there. So if you've never played out, 100 people,
that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. So that was my first experience. And I'm not sure if I was nervous. I might have been, but I'm pretty sure I must have had some nerves. But the one thing I just remember, what really caught me, is being able to play the music you love to play, but hearing it through some incredibly loud speakers. Oh boy. That was like a little light bulb in my head that said, oh, this is something I can't do at home. And playing some tracks and also getting a reaction from the crowd, that was also something that you just don't experience at home. And you're like, hey, wait a minute. I can play music really loud. I like to hear it. I can now feel the music more than I can ever feel it at home. And people are actually appreciating what you're doing because they like some of the music that you're playing. So I think that took away the nerves that might have been there pretty quick. Also, I think I just have a little bit of a calm factor over me. I can get nervous, but not really. So I wasn't like sitting there with shaking hands before I had to get on. But I just really remember, like, from my first experiences, that is something that just stuck. Like, hey, hearing the music that loud and not standing in a club and depending on a DJ to play the track, but being the one who gets to play the music, that was something that really excited me.
So where did this – I mean, I love the fact that you had the basement. You basically had your own club. And you invited the talent to you. I just think that's incredible. That's such a great thing. And where did this obviously life-changing meeting with Brainpower start? And how did you get that gig?
Same thing. I had the basement. And at a certain point, I mean, I had people coming through. I got introduced to other people. I actually got to meet like half of the underground rap scene from Amsterdam because people were bringing people. We just started out with a couple of friends and none of us were like professional rappers, but we just liked the freestyle. But at a certain point, more people started coming through and some of these people were like definitely more pro rappers. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, someone just started talking about this guy named Brainpower. Because he wasn't from Amsterdam, but he had moved to Amsterdam. He was studying there now. And a couple of weeks later, I was at Fat Beats in Amsterdam. We used to have a record store called Fat Beats. It was a store from the U.S. They had one in L.A., one in New York, and they opened one in Amsterdam. I think back in 97 or 96, something like that. And I was there, and there was a guy there, and he was just freestyling. So that record store, just to bring it back, had like a DJ booth, and some of the employees were always just playing the new music. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy there, and he was doing a freestyle rap, and he was just rapping, taking topics by looking at all of the album sleeves, taking those names and using those in a rap. And I was like, wow, this guy is dope. And that was Rain Power. So I just told him, like, hey, man, we got these jam sessions going on at my house every like Friday, Saturday. You should come through. And he came through pretty soon after that. And I guess it was pretty obvious to both of us that there was kind of a connection. And from that, we just continued to stay in contact. And it turned out that he lived maybe 5 minutes away from me when he moved to Amsterdam. So that was convenient as well. And we just started to hang out. There was a clear connection. We both had a passion for what we were doing. And that just turned into something bigger. When we met, I was actually already DJing for a local rap group, The Proof. And I DJed for them for a while. And it was pretty clear to him, Rain Power, that it worked when I was behind the decks for a live act. So we started to talk about maybe doing that as well. Now, I wasn't doing a lot of gigs with The Proof. So to me, it sounded like a good idea. And we ended up entering one of the biggest or the biggest talent show that you had here at the time. This was like a national talent show. They had like rounds all over the country. It's called, the Dutch name is Grote Prijs van Nederland. It basically means like the Great Dutch Award, let's call it something like that.
Uh-huh.
And we just decided to enter, and we practiced for that for, I don't know, 4 to 8 weeks, like 6 to 8 hours a day. Just went all in, had all sorts of things intertwined in there, some video footage in there as well. He actually battled himself during that. So we recorded him rapping and just practiced that over and over. So he would be on stage rapping to a version of himself on a screen in the back. And I would do DJ routines in between, just all sorts of stuff. And it turned out that we won in every category except best singer, because we weren't singing. But we won best DJ, best MC. We won the jury. They voted for us. But there was also a people's prize, and the people also voted for us. So we basically won everything. And it never stopped from then. We've been touring for 21 years now.
Wow, man, that's a fantastic story. That must have felt nice compared to just a few years earlier, getting that arm across you on the way into a club.
Yeah.
But, you know, winning the Dutch talent show, that must have felt like vindication for you.
And now we're getting into all clubs because we're doing shows there.
of course. Another way in. Although sad that was the case. But So that's awesome, and that is such a great story. And I think the lesson here is people say, how do I get started? But you get started by doing it.
Yeah.
You find a way to do it, and it doesn't matter what that way is, because it's meeting people that makes things happen. Listen, I wanted to talk to you about your music. So clearly you are hip-hop born and bred.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not born, but certainly hip-hop, you know, to the bottom of your heart.
Yeah.
Have you ever DJed any other kind of music? Had an interest in any other styles?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, I like I always say, like, hip-hop is the foundation. That's my main passion, my main love. But I do plenty of shows where I play hip-hop, R&B, some dancehall. I like the older R&B, like the New Jack Swing era, really mm-hmm. into that. But also, like, UK Garage, loved it when that came out, play some of that as well. Old soul, funk, some like older house as well, like some of the house classics. I played parties where I was playing everything, where I would play stuff all the way up to playing Madness. You know,
wow. So proper open format parties.
So yeah, and we used to do stuff like that at our hip hop and R&B parties as well. So the party was hip hop, R&B, and dancehall. But whenever we felt like doing something else, we would throw in anything from UB40 to Michael Jackson and open format wasn't a thing. Some people started to call it eclectic as well, but none of those names existed. We were just doing that like, hey, you know what? I'm going to play some Michael Jackson right now. And why not? We felt we had the freedom as DJs to do that. Now, of course, this was at our own events, so you have a little bit more freedom. Because if someone is booking me to play hip-hop and R&B, I'm not just going to play everything, if that's not supposed to be the case there. But yeah, like I said, hip-hop is the foundation. But just looking at hip-hop, at the time when I started to listen to hip-hop, a lot of the hip-hop was sample-based. And I was doing my research by looking at the covers of the albums and later on the CDs. And I was reading all of the credits. And then you would see, like, they used a sample performed by, and then you'd see the original artist's name. I would go to record stores where they were selling secondhand albums, and I would go crate digging, and I started to run into all of these names that I had seen on the back of these album covers in the sample credits. So you run into all kinds of names that you never knew of before. Now you're seeing their albums, and you're getting the OJs, and you're getting everything you find. And then you find out they have more great songs on there. So hip hop introduced me to a lot of different styles of music as well. Mm. Plus, my mom at home, she used to play. She was really into soul, but more of the harder type of soul stuff. So the James Brown type of soul. She never liked the mushy soft stuff. That was not her thing. Yeah. She was into like the James Browns, the Otis Reddings. And she was also listening to a lot of African music. So my mom is Dutch, but she was the one listening to all that sort of music. So I was getting all of these influences as well. So that definitely builds you hearing all of that stuff as well. And I was into Bob Marley and The Doors and you name it. So all of that, whenever it can, it will come through in the music a little bit as well. But back to the core, hip hop. But I played a lot of styles for sure.
Let's talk about your mom and dad and your family life. You know, what did they expect you to do? What did they want you to do? Or did they just not have a kind of plan for you or an expectation? When you were growing up, what was the soon-to-be TLM kind of like destined for?
I feel very lucky. My mom has definitely always been a supporter. And I'll definitely take that with me as we are now raising our own kids. I mean, I have two sons, and I definitely take that with me. She was always supportive, and I've never in my life felt pressure coming from her telling me that she was expecting me to go in a certain direction. And I remember being very young that she already saw that I liked hip hop, and she would actually record a radio program that came on pretty late at night. That was one of the first like hip hop shows that we had here in the Netherlands on some radio station. She would record that for me late at night so I could listen to it on tape. So she really supported me, like, hey, he likes this type of music. She was not one of those parents like, hey, what is this? What's going on? Or maybe she hears one cuss word and she's like, no, you can't listen to this. She was very supportive when it came to that. I think it was pretty clear to her that this was something I was really into, and she just supported that passion. I mean, before music, it was basketball. I started to play basketball when I was 10, and I did that for like 10 years, and I was playing at the highest level that you can play here in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. which is not really high because it's not a big sport here, but it was on a national level that I played here. That's the highest you can play. But in that last year, music had really caught my attention as well. Like, I was really not just playing at home anymore, and I wanted to make this something I wanted to do more. Couldn't combine the two, so I stopped playing basketball, really started to focus more on the music. Now, I know she definitely wasn't happy that I wasn't paying that much attention to school, maybe as much as I should have been, but she never, like, blamed it on music or told me I couldn't DJ. And throughout the whole thing, she's seen the progress that I was making. Even though I didn't have a plan, I didn't, like I said, I stumbled into it. Just, this is a passion, started doing it. Now all of a sudden I'm doing gigs in clubs. Now I'm also doing shows with an MC. And I think she just saw the potential because she saw the passion and she saw that I was able to make things happen. So I never felt pressure from that side. So I'm very blessed because I know there's a lot of parents out there that have a certain image in their head and they want their kids to become something they want. Mm. Not what the kids want, but the parents want, because they feel how their kids will achieve will be something that they can shine with. It looks good for them.
Yeah.
They can basically show off to other parents, look how my child has done. So they're now putting that pressure on that child, or maybe that kid doesn't even want to go in that direction. So again, I feel very blessed that I never had that pressure.
So have you ever had a proper job, or has DJing, you know exactly what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Because I mean, I've got about 18 months I can claim as a proper job in my whole life. So, but have you ever done anything other than DJing in the music industry?
No, nothing noteworthy. I mean, I've done maybe a couple of very short-lived things. I mean, I've worked at a call center for a short amount of time, and this was a call center where you were doing outbound calls. So basically what that means is you're sitting in an office with a bunch of, well, not kids, we were a little bit older, but a bunch of people. And in our case, we were selling a hotel certificate. So you're basically selling people a certificate that will allow them to go to any of 40 hotels for a weekend, something like
got
that.
Got you.
I did that for a very short while, and the rest is not even worth mentioning. But no, I basically never did anything else than music. And it was at least clear to me that this is where my passion was. And I, actually, before I knew it, I was already so deep into it that doing a job beside it was not really going to work for me. I mean, you could do it. Most DJs I knew were actually just working a 9-to-5 during the weeks and DJing in the weekend. But for me, this turned into a full-time thing, like half of the week, just finding new music, digging in crates, practicing with Brain Power, doing a show in a club, then doing a show with him. I was doing a lot of mixtapes at the time. And at that time, it was not digital. So I was making mixtapes, recording them. The first couple were like recorded on an actual cassette. So the master was also a cassette. I had a place where I could copy the tapes. This was like a duplication store. But the mixtapes weren't legal. But the guy at the store was nice, so I could, he would run my tapes after closing hours, just in case they would get inspections. So they would copy tapes for me, and I was literally going out and distributing and selling my tapes. So that takes up time as well. So I just went all in on the music and never looked back. Now, with that came a lot of ups and downs, no doubt, but I never looked back.
So interestingly, you have got another job now, of course, because you're a dad, and that changes everything for DJs. Ooh. So how did parenthood kind of alter? Was that kind of all in the thinking when you thought, you know what, I can get on YouTube, I can teach, I can kind of pull back from the DJing a bit? Did this kind of all happen at once?
No, I think for me what happened is I just decided to go all in on my son, just starting with my first son. I mean, I have two now, but when my son was born, I just saw the fact that I have control of my own time as the greatest opportunity to spend as much time with him as I could. And that's basically exactly what I did. Now, I have to add, that did definitely take away from my DJ career, because I spent a lot less time that I would have spent on that, because I was spending it all on him. And I'm very happy I did. I mean, I got to witness everything. And I mean, I say this because I know there's DJs out there that felt very motivated when they got their first kid to just go out, work as hard as they could to make all the money they could because they wanted to be able to provide. I totally get that, and I respect that. But basically, I chose the opposite. So I started to work less because that's when I wanted to spend as much time with him. That allowed me to also witness everything, all the first developments. I got to see my both of my boys take their first steps. I was in the room for both those events. Those are things you don't want to miss. Just because of that, there will never be any regrets.
No, I was the same with at least one of mine. I kind of, my wife came home, I'm like, guess what? But all right then. So look, we're running out of time here, and I just want to, because people are fascinated, you know, especially with someone like you, this has been your whole life. As a dad, as someone who's been doing this for a couple of decades, and you've made some changes, you're not DJing as much, you've got your education side. What does a typical day look like in your life? A working day.
So it all starts early in the morning because every day the kids got to go to school. So that's definitely a part of the day. And once the kids are off to school, different things. Most of the time I will go to the gym then, work out, because I've given health a lot of priority in the last couple of years, but especially now. I mean, I want this life to continue for a long time in the most healthy state that I can be. So paying a lot of attention on that. Also for my kids, I want to be around for them for a long time. Plus, I want them to see a healthy example. So I want to make sure I give them that example. And after that, there's a couple of different things. So some days it will be video, just recording or production. I make videos for my channel. Then I have a couple of clients that I work for. Of course, I work for DJ City. So every month I produce some video content with them. And I've done several other videos. So sometimes that will take up time. Then I have the podcast on one of the days that I have to shoot. I do everything myself, hopefully not for long. So, you know, editing takes up a lot of time.
It does.
Yeah. So I will need to eventually go to a point where I'm not doing that anymore, because that is eating up a lot of my time right now. And I still have like a bunch of videos that have not been uploaded because I still have to do the edits. Mm-hmm. But it is still a little bit of a back and forth, because in the middle of the afternoon, I have to make sure that both kids get home. Both of my sons go to different schools. They are free from school at different times. So I have to pick them up and then go back to do some work. And before you know it, I have to start making dinner, cook. So it is really intertwined. It is really a combination of doing the two things. And at certain points, we have rehearsals for shows. So when I'm doing shows with Brain Power, sometimes we just do club shows. It's just the two of us. I'll provide the music and I'll do the backing raps, and it's him. But for instance, now we got a couple shows coming up where we're playing with the entire band. So we're doing rehearsal sessions. So that's going to be a couple of 6 hours in our rehearsal space. So every day is a little bit different, but again, a little bit the same. Every day will include some music and a lot of video production. And I'm actually now making my first steps in the last month or so. I'm making my first steps more into your realm, actually, because after 100 years, I'm now working on my first actual course, and I don't have to explain to you.
About time. About time.
I definitely don't have to explain to you how much time that takes up. So that's something. I mean, I've wanted to do that for a long time. But I really had to set time apart for that. And the only problem with intertwining everything is it's a little bit harder to get one job done. So I'm actually learning now to even manage my time better and really focus on one thing instead of focusing on 20 different things. That's why I definitely fell back a little bit from DJing. I haven't organized an event in a couple of years because I was doing that as well. And doing too many things just isn't working out anymore. When I was starting out, it was fine. I was doing everything at the same time, 24/7, nothing else. But definitely once you get a little bit older and once you have a family and different responsibilities, you can't be out like 24 hours a day. So I really had to tone it down with certain things. and take things more into perspective. And business wise, I need to start looking at the things that are going to be better for me as well. So that's definitely part of it now.
Yeah. So an evolution. Listen, yeah. TNM, I thank you very, very much for being generous with your time and sharing that. I know a lot of people will have got a lot from listening to your incredible story. And we look forward very much to your course and everything else that's coming from you in the immediate future. From all of us here, the best of luck with all of that. And thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you. And I have to add one more thing. I've told this to DJ Angelo, and I have to tell it to you as well. I think I've told you in person, but I want to tell you again right here. You guys were definitely the inspiration for me to also start doing the video thing. Because when I was on YouTube and I started to look around, I was thinking there was going to be a lot more educational material on YouTube, because YouTube was a place where you could find anything. And when it came to DJing, there was not a lot out there. I was expecting a lot of American stuff, and that was not out there. I ran into basically three outlets. One was the DJ Tutor, and he's still out there.
Yes.
Then there was DJ Angelo. Okay, I have to give it up for DJ Tech Tools. They were there as well. But then you were there as well. So I saw you and Angelo, and I was like, hey, that definitely triggered me as well. Like, cool, there's not a lot out there. I'm going to join these guys and see if I can add it from my perspective as well. So just salute to you for doing this for such a long time. And you've created something big in over the years. I've seen that growth, and that's pretty amazing. So my hat's off to you, man.
Oh, well, thank you very much. We do it for the same reason as you, out of pure love. And because let's face it, who wants a proper job? So, TLM, thank you very much. We'll talk again soon. Take care.
All right. Bye.